Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio in Chicago, Illinois, it's Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. On tonight's show, we have Chicago Tribune cartoonist Scott Stantis. From the House of Blues, local brews and local grooves, Ryan Shea. With David Hochberg, also David Osborne and Paul Morris, authors of Wealth Can't Wait. We also welcome in esteemed lawyer Rich Lenkoff. And don't forget, get your calls in for Tell Me Something Good at the end of the show. And now, here's your host, Patty Vasquez.
Thursday night, we are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio right here on Michigan Avenue. I am back from Springfield, and joining me in studio is the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and editorial board member of the Tribune, Scott Stantis.
Thanks for having me. And like every political wonk in the state, I am green with envy. An eventful week.
Yeah, it was interesting.
You made news, and I was telling you this before we went on the air. You were on every single political blog and rundown, every single one, and it was a link to your interview with
Speaker Michael Madigan,
which no one apparently I didn't know he could talk.
Well, and that was really what I've been going for. The whole idea of going down to Springfield for the last 3 years, and it's funny, when I'm in Springfield, they talk about not having a budget for 2 years. And I'm always really bad about, like, how many years has it been? But this is my third session, so that's how I'm counting it as my third year going down. I started going down April of 2015, and I've been going down, and not every single week. It takes its toll, you know, financially for me and also physically and emotionally, because I'm a little bit down. I know that you could tell probably in the green room. I'm really frustrated by what's going on this week. But my goal has always been for people to feel connected to this, to their community, to their legislators, to their government. They are there to serve you. That's their job. And I have been asking for, I didn't ask for an interview with Speaker Madigan until this year. And partly because, one, I never thought it was possible, certainly in the first year. I actually did try to request an interview with Governor Rauner because he seemed to be making himself available. He was speaking to Steve Cochran in the morning. And I had gone in and they gave me a little card to fill out when I first went to his office back in 2015.
Rauner?
And, yes.
What does the card ask?
It just says you fill out your name and you put your email address. And I don't know if it's by lottery or how you arrange for a meeting with the governor. But I never heard back from them. So I just, you know, I let it go. I figured, and I've been having conversations with our legislators. But, you know, the conversation really does become, it's a battle of the wills between Speaker Madigan and Governor Rauner at the top. And then, you know, the minority House Leader Redonio in the Senate and President John Cullerton. And those are really all the major players the bigger names and who is trying to make a deal and compromise. So it occurred to me, like you said, nobody knows what the speaker sounds like or what he thinks or why he's doing this. Why is he digging in? Why has he dug in? What is his side of the story? And it wasn't going to be an aha sort of interview. It wasn't going, you know, there were moments where he rephrased a question that I had asked and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't what I was asking.
Well, how did you get the interview?
I put in the request. I talked to several legislators and it really, I do have to thank Leader Lou Lang, Representative Sarah Feigenholz and Representative Robert Martwick, who all in different ways, you know, basically kind of vouched for me, you know, that, hey, she's somebody who wants to have a conversation. It's an important platform. You know, listeners are engaged. We've had listeners go down to Springfield and meet me and I've shown them around and we've watched the proceedings. I try to make this as involved for everybody as possible. And I continue next week. I'll be in Springfield. I'll be down for the next 3 weeks. So if people want to email me or you want to text us and say, hey, you know, I can pick a date. Maybe I just can put a date. I'll put a date down maybe next Wednesday. I'll meet you at the statue of the lady in the rotunda. You know, I'll have to do it later.
I'm still dying to know how you got this interview.
It was really it. It was really Representative Feigenholz.
Did you just get a call at 2 a.m. and say, meet us at the back of the alley behind the old Capitol building?
No, I was told to, I'm trying to think of how this happened because it was a few weeks ago. Representative Martwick said, hey, you know how you said, hey, did you get my text, right?
Yeah.
So tell people what kind of phone I have.
It's a flip phone that's older than me.
So there were there
I think
were
it's from the Johnson administration.
There were several frantic texts from one of the representatives who was like, "Hey, give me a call. I have good news," and I didn't. And then the next day, they're like, "Hey, are you like?" They started to get worried because this representative doesn't generally like text and say, "Hey, call me right now." So like on the third day, I finally was like, "Oh, sorry, I missed your message."
I'm looking at the phone.
Yeah, so this is my. If you go to WGNRadio.com, this is the phone that I found out that I was going to.
Can't you get that I cheap must, from AARP? Isn't that the?
It was actually intended for my mother several years ago, when she's like, "I just want something simple. Why do I have to? You know, I want to make phone calls and now." But then she decided she wanted an iPhone. So I bought her an iPhone and decided that when my son was old enough, I would give him the phone that was intended for my mom. But then Griffin wasn't, you know, I just felt like this was kind of embarrassing for him at school. Like, this is a bit, right? This is, so.
I'm sorry, people. I wish I could describe this. So I can't.
So I decided I would give him my Samsung. I had a Samsung 5, not necessarily the most up-to-date phone either, but, you know, better than this for him. And so I gave him that with the intention of finally going and getting upgrading. But I missed the text. I mean, I must have seemed so unimpressed. Hey, we're lining up the speaker for you. I'm gonna get to you in 3 days. So I didn't. I didn't know. I was contacted on a Wednesday, and I didn't get back to them until Friday. I called Press Secretary Steve Brown, who is the press secretary for the Speaker of the House. And my request was that I wanted him to come to WGN Radio because this would be the best possible scenario. I mean,
sure,
this is an important interview. I thought, let's sit down with all the equipment and make it sound good. We'd have Michael Heidemann in the booth. It didn't have to be during this show. We could pre-record it. You know, of course, my dream scenario was that he would be here from 11 p.m. to midnight and take calls. But everyone in the legislature is like, he's never going to do that. And then, so Steve Brown and I went back and forth. They were on break for 2 weeks. And then so when they came back, I said, I'm going to be back in town on Monday. So if there's some time that the speaker has to sit down with me, that would be great. And we arranged to have an engineer from WUIS so that there would be nothing left to chance as far as my technical abilities. Because I have my own digital recorder, but I'm honestly like 80% for that going well.
Yeah, yeah.
We did one for Cavalia, and I did this great interview, but it started raining, and you could hear, all you could hear is the rain hitting the tent. And
I stand by that audio quality.
Yes.
It was a great interview still. Just the rain was just torrential.
Yeah, I had this panic. I heard horses,
nay.
Acrobatics. Yeah. it was a train wreck, and then I had gone to El Paso and I had interviewed the wounded warriors, some soldiers who have, you know, have really worked really hard to recover from their injuries and illnesses, and the access with the Army was rough, and I ended up only being able to interview a few people like out in the middle of the field, the track and field area, and of course there's wind.
Of course,
you know, all you hear is this. Right, so I just had these nightmares that I would interview Speaker Madigan.
I'm going to guess there weren't any horses or wind in his office. I could
but
be
can
wrong.
You, if you listen to it, you can hear him, both of us. At one point, the zippers from my jacket hits. I have a leather jacket that I was wearing, and you hear this a couple times. And then, so I don't move. I pinned my hands to the table so this wouldn't happen. But you can, the mics are so good in that interview. You can hear both of us. He had notes. He had notes on me. He had notes on some of the Civic Federation's recommendations for how to get out of the budget. He had he had things in front of him. I had my notes, of course. So Steve Brown contacted me on Monday and said the speaker will meet with you tomorrow morning at 10. And they never told me how much time I had. That was the other thing. But there was a moment during the interview where Speaker Madigan like pushed back, and I'm like, "Oh, we're almost done. I think I'm losing them." But I was, believe me, no one was more surprised than me that I got 30 minutes with the Speaker of the House.
So how did you find him? I mean, outside of the interview, which
was fine. Scott, it was okay. So this is something it just dawned on me last night.
He's a tiny fella.
No, he's okay. First of all, I walked in and he said, "Can I offer you some water?" And he has a little kitchen behind his office, and he went over, and I said yes, because I find that people who offer you something really do want to help,
yeah,
right? So he offered me a glass of water, and I took that, and then he said, "So you're a comedian," which, you know, that's I wasn't sure. I never know what that means when somebody asks me that. When they've Googled, it means he Googled me or someone gave him the information. I said, "Yes, I am, and as a matter of fact, I've had the pleasure of performing at the Beverly Arts Center," which is one of the great venues for artists in the city of Chicago, which I'm sure he's very proud of. And I said, we have nothing like that in Jefferson Park. The only thing we have close to that is the Irish American Heritage Center. And he said, oh, yes, I'm familiar with that. And I said, and this is where I really think it was my dad, because I did not go in there planning to say anything about my heritage. I said, I've always thought my dad was North Side Irish, but when he passed away, I discovered on his birth certificate that he was actually South Side Irish. And the speaker said, you're Irish? And I swear to you, Scott, I really believe it was my dad. If my dad had been alive and he knew I was gonna, you know, if I was talking to him about going to speak with the speaker, he would have had some choice words. And he'd be like, not for nothing, Pat, but could you go ahead and tell that guy to, you know, he would have said a lot of things. But I really feel like it was my dad saying, hey, when you meet the speaker at a house, don't forget to tell him you're Irish. Like, I really feel like my dad was there telling me. I do. It gives me the chills to think about it, because the speaker like relaxed a little bit and was very like, oh, you're Irish. And he talked about his wife, who I did not know is half Mexican or half Latina.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I did not know that either. And so we talked about his grandkids, who are also part Latino. And so we started chatting about our heritage for a few moments. And that was how we started talking. And then we sat down and we were off to the races.
From all accounts, I've never met him. I've seen him once, mm-hmm. but I've never met him. He's actually a nice, kind of genial, yes. You know, Southside Irish nice guy.
Yeah, there was a moment. There were a couple moments, and as one senator described him, he is beguiling. That's what there's a charm to him. There is and there's a comfort. I wasn't nervous. I don't know why. Believe me, I don't know why I wasn't more nervous. I think it was
at least you couldn't tell.
It was maybe it was just by being naive or just kind of like at one point I'm like, this is what I'm doing. I sought this out. This was my one of my end games was to be able to speak to the speaker, and the other one is to speak to the governor. I've interviewed President Cullerton, and to you know he was wonderful to chat with, but I want to hear all their stories, all their sides of what's going on.
You know, Patty, I had a quick question.
Yes.
I wanted to know. We had a few listeners call in too. Just curious, did the when you were interviewing the Michael Madigan, the speaker. Did you need to go through any kind of vetting with your questions,
no,
or did he
not at all.
Put a kibosh on one of them?
Not one. No.
Wow.
No, not a single. There were no restrictions. There was no, like I said, there was not even a time restriction.
Man. Okay.
I did feel like when he pushed away he just like kind of sat back from it, and I wasn't sure if it was to look at me or to stretch.
Something with the body language was giving
the
you
body
a
language.
Bad vibe.
Well, and I also want this to be the first one. Mm-hmm. So I also, you know, once you go through all your questions and now you're just winging it, then you run the risk of like, you're never going to come back if you push the line. I did tell him that Steve Cochran would like to have him on the show, and he and Steve Brown both laughed, and Speaker Madigan said he's not making a very good case for it. Mm-hmm. But by the way, and I can tell everybody that they told me that it really is a scheduling issue and the travel. And I mean, the governor's not doing my show either. I mean,
no, but he does other shows on WGN.
That's true. That's a good point.
So,
he isn't on the show yet.
Yes.
Yet.
But
yet.
The door is open for us to have a follow-up interview.
Oh, great.
So that was very nice.
Where can people hear this?
It's on WGNradio.com. It's also on my Facebook page. You can go to Patty V Show, and it's on my page.
Well, it's quite a coup. And seriously, congratulations.
Thank
because
you.
Every, you know, I read all of these things in the morning. It's because that's what I do. And every single one of them either led with it or was the second thing they had.
Well, okay.
I'll give you the links
to that. I laughed because when we, you know, I talked to WGN, I talked to my bosses, Todd Manley and Stephanie Menendez, and we were all talking about how to handle it and how we should, you know, put it out there, and they were going to lead the news with it. And I'm not kidding you, an hour later, I swear Trump just did not want me to have a good day on Tuesday. Seriously, Esmeralda, because I did this interview on Tuesday, and you're telling me it's leading the news today. So that's 2 days. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Had it been a different day, I think that it would have gone differently.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, I just wasn't allowed to have I wasn't allowed to have that. But no, it's not. But the interview was not about the show. The interview was not about me. And the interview is really not about Michael Madigan. I mean, ultimately, I know that that's. But what the interview is about is that people need to hear from him. They need to hear why.
Yeah.
Where is he coming from? And really, that interview is for people to hear from him. That's the whole point.
Yes. And you provided that because it is frustrating for a lot of us who live in the state. We don't hear from him. He runs the state. He's the most powerful man in the state, or a woman. He's the most powerful person And we don't hear from him.
Then you didn't hear the first. I agree with Governor Edgar. I believe that, even with a weak or incompetent governor, I think the governor, and this is something that the Governor Edgar has said, and other and I've heard from other people, the governor has more power than the Speaker of the House. He simply does at this point in particular right now.
I'm not sure I buy that.
Well, I'm going to be interviewing Governor Edgar, so I'll tell him that you think so. More after that on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Scott Stantis, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. I'm very sorry I raised my voice to you.
No worries. No, that's what we...
but you made me light up the phone lines. And I apologize to Rich. Right now we're talking to our friend from the House of Blues. Ryan Shea joins us. He's the general manager, and you have a fun event coming up. By the way, Rich, if you can hold on, I will take your call. I promise. I know you have a question, but we are... I'm going to be honest with you. We got a lot of food in the studio. I might fall asleep during the next segment.
Holy Mary.
Ryan, what is going on at the House of Blues that you brought all this magic over here?
Well, we have local brews, local grooves, and that comes with a little bit of food as well. So
yeah,
I wanted to give you guys a little taste of everything. So it's a great event at House of Blues. It's about the fourth time we've done it, I think. And we have 18 breweries that will be on site we're selling, of course, but they've got their samples. And we've got 9 bands, 3 DJs. The whole venue's open. So we have the restaurant, the music hall, the foundation room. It's all part of the same event. So you get the ticket to get in and you're going all over the place and trying different stuff. We've got all these like kind of street festival style food stands set up all over the place. And, you know, I told the chefs, let's just get a little bit of everything to bring over so everybody can try it. And they loaded us up pretty well here.
Yes, you did. I just tried the mac and cheese and did my orgasm face. I'm sorry, Patty had to see that.
Maybe we should change the name of that food item.
I knew I felt uncomfortable for a reason. It was, yeah, or yeah, I don't know. Orgasm Fest isn't really orgasmic. Convention is not really, that's not really marketable. I mean,
people might be disappointed then when they get there.
You're right. Yeah, it's
might set the expectation a little too high.
Local brews, local grooves, and the bands that you've got coming in. Tell us a little bit about some of the music you're gonna have.
It's very funky this year. So we've got a lot of horn sections, and we got a couple of the blues guys that play for us regularly at House of Blues, and then we've got some really fun cover bands and some bands doing their own stuff. So it's a lot of fun. My band, the Blue Olives, they would be mad if I didn't mention that. We'll be playing as well. And we've got 4 horns and a B3 player and a bunch of great singers. So it's a really fun event.
And what time does this event come?
Starts at 5 o'clock.
I saw my entire crew come in. And I was like, I was saying come in at the same time I was asking you a question. What time does this event start?
It starts at 5.
Oh, 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock. So as soon as you're done with work tomorrow, come on down. And it goes, it'll sort of wind up around 11, but we have a band that plays in the restaurant till like 1:30 in the morning. So it'll be a good party.
So you could be there for like 8.5 hours.
You could put in a full shift, a full day.
Yeah. You start with the night crew.
Yep.
You know, they're all getting their other stuff set up, and you can, you know, at the end of the night, help them refill all the ketchup bottles.
Exactly.
Do all their prep work. Well, how long have you worked at the House of Blues?
I've been a little over 7 years. I've been at the House
really?
Of Blues. Well, yeah,
it's a great joint. I know there's a band that we were so thrilled. The Scholars, when you have, I think it was like a Sunday night show. You guys and the Scholars have played there a couple times, and the person who booked them had heard them on WGN.
That's
on
awesome.
My show, so
that's awesome.
Very cool. It's such a fun venue. How long has that been open?
21 we're about 20 and a half. So
no.
we had our 20th anniversary last year.
Has it been that long?
Yeah.
I feel so old.
Yeah, House of Blues as a company has been around for 25 years, and then the Chicago venue's been in place for 20.
It's a great joint. Do you get a chance to go over there, Scott?
Oh, yeah, we've been there for a couple of events. And the Sunday brunch is great, too. The gospel brunch, we were there for that.
Glad you mentioned that. It's Mother's Day, right? So we do an extra brunch. We do 2 brunches every Sunday for gospel brunch. And on Mother's Day and Easter, we do 3. And so we've got the third one at 3 o'clock. Still a few tickets left. There's still some single tickets left for the 10 a.m. and the 12:30. So if you're not a big fan of your mom and you want to send her by herself,
you want to see other people
would work. Otherwise,
Scott, you said Jeannie's out of town, so
she is. I just might show up.
Maybe just get by a singlet.
There will be some of that bacon. There will be some of that bacon there. I brought some bacon. So
So soothe your sorrow with your bacon.
These guys are wearing, we have some empty beer cans before there was any beer in it and no lids. and we put a little necklace on it so you can wear it around your neck. And then we just put bacon in it. We call it bacon.
Bacon. Bacon.
And you guys are digging it.
This is great. So tell us a little bit about so the egg roll is quite spicy. I was surprised by that.
That is the spicy pork egg roll.
Hence the name.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
And it all comes together.
The mac and cheese is so creamy.
The mac and cheese, yeah, as we heard from Scott.
Very creamy. We got some pulled pork. We have, okay, so fried chicken in a waffle cone.
Yeah.
Come on. With a jalapeno cornbread waffle.
Yeah, right? What's not to like? A little
then,
coleslaw in there to even it out to get your vegetable.
Do you have now?
Yeah.
Get at it. So the zombie? What's the ale? The pale ale that you said is not. They were saying that's not
the Three Floyd Zombie Dust.
Yes, it's not a very.
It's rare.
Accessible. It's rare.
It's rare.
Yes.
Yeah. But so we'll have some of that for sure.
I have to have a taste.
So
of that.
Yeah. So we have the beer guys really love this event. They come and hang out and they'll pour the beer and talk to you about it. And each brewery brings in two different barrels, and a lot of times it's rare stuff that you can't always get. So
right.
That's what's pretty fun about the beer geeks really kind of like this event.
For those of you who are wondering what the noise is.
Yes, it's okay. It's all good.
That's the crew tucking in, as they say.
It is we're tantalizing you with a food that you can have tomorrow night at the House of Blues. And how much are tickets to get in?
Tickets are $10.
What?
But,
what?
Yeah, $10. Now, that doesn't include everything, right? I'm going to charge you for stuff when you come in.
Oh.
But $10 gets you in. And, you know, if you spend a little time on our Facebook page, you might find some ways to get some free tickets between now and 5 o'clock tomorrow. So I would suggest that.
Very cool. I love that. So it starts at 5 o'clock, goes to 11-ish, perhaps a little bit later. There's
yep.
going to be music.
Yep.
The entire building is wide open with all different stations and food and beer.
Yeah, and if you know, the Foundation Room's pretty cool at the House of Blues. If you've not been there, it's like this really neat VIP club at the top of the House of Blues, and a lot of people don't know that it's there.
I've never been there.
And
I've never been invited.
Not just everybody can get there. You kind of need to be invited. And so it's pretty cool because on Friday you can go up there. The whole venue's open and you can see some spots you might not see otherwise. You can go into the opera boxes and see the view from there and stuff.
What?
So it'll be fun.
I love that. I love that. Do you mind if I take a comment about the conversation we were having about the state?
Oh, please do.
All right then. Rich, I know that you've been holding so long. I appreciate it, Rich. How are you doing?
Oh, not bad. How about yourself tonight, Patty?
Very well. Happy to be home in Chicago. It's good to be back.
Yeah. Good to hear you back at home, too.
Thank you.
Glad you're here. You brought the good weather that you're having down there back home with you.
It was spectacularly warm in Springfield. Go ahead. What do you want to say?
Yeah. Now, like you guys were talking earlier about the budget and the pension and how, your political cartoonist there, I can't remember his full name.
Scott.
Said, he said their pensions for a state worker is insane. In one sense, now my wife works for the state, so she's in that same state pension budget type deal. But what everybody fails to mention is they are not paying into Social Security, so they are not eligible for Social Security. So when you take the numbers, the pension that I paid into and with the union and my Social Security, combine those two, that's more than her pension.
Right, and I paint with a broad brush there earlier, and I just would want to not walk it back, but be more specific that there are a lot of state workers who do not get the golden pension, but there are an awful lot who do.
And the other thing,
right.
and I'm trying to organize my thoughts when Scott and Rob Martier were talking about how our budget it is separate from our budget. Changing the way we pay our pensions and the way we structure it is legislative. The budget is the budget. It's what we spend. It's everything that we spend money on. It is a spending plan. It is, you know, our roads, our first responders, our schools, our social services. It is changing the pension is a legislative process, and that's something that can happen at any time. But they want to do it. It has to be this, otherwise I'm not going to pass the budget. So it's
right.
It's being held hostage.
It's been held hostage for decades
for legislative issues.
And it's the fact that they haven't addressed it. And guys like this guy, guys like Rich, his wife. I mean, there may or may not be a pension, and that's just criminal. They made a promise to her, and by extension, but to Rich, And this may or may not, the obligations aren't being met. It's under 50% now, if I'm not mistaken.
No, but they still receive their pensions. The obligation.
Yes.
So the legal, when you talk
but
about,
when you, run
when
out
you
money,
talk about the obligation, you're talking about how much it has to be funded, but that's still, that's beyond what they actually will have to pay. That's what's legislatively in the Constitution, how much they have to have in their, in the, in the.
Well, yeah, but when you have no money to pay it.
Okay, you're not letting me finish.
Okay.
More after this on 720 WGN. Rich, have a great night.
Hey,
yes.
Hey, one quick thing. I know it's early. And it's too late, too early for the end of your show. But my good news is,
yes,
after 3 months of terror, I'm cancer free.
That's fantastic. Yay! Yeah, that's awesome, Rich. That's fantastic.
Congratulations.
That's really great. Thank you so much, Rich. I'm gonna bring in somebody to explain the pension to Scott. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Have a great night. More after this. We're gonna talk to Rich Lenkov when we come back, and we've got Ryan in the studio with some great food from the House of Blues. Tomorrow night is their local grooves event. House of Blues starting at 5 o'clock, and you can make a whole night of it. More after this on 720 WGN.
I've known David for a long time. I consider him a good friend, but he is the Sam Kinison of mortgage and finance.
I'm gonna pop some tags. Only got $20 in my pocket. I'm looking for a drummer. This is being awesome. I'll wear your granddad's clothes. I look incredible.
You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Scott Santis, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and editorial board member for the Tribune, joins us in studio. We have our friend Ryan Shea, who is the general manager for the House of Blues. David Hochberg on the line. David, have you ever been to the House of Blues and had some of their amazing food?
Oh, yeah. My old company had a box, a suite, right stage left. Second level, and was awesome. I was the only single guy about 10, 15 years ago, and they had it. And I used to go to shows every single time that there was a show, and because nobody else could go, everybody was married with kids, and I'm just like, I'll take those. Boom.
Wait, you can buy companies have boxes at the House of Blues, like a sporting event?
There's like Ryan, what do they call it? Like orchestra boxes?
Opera box. Yeah, opera
there
box.
You go. Yeah, opera box.
I kind of love that.
Great. Now that I know that, I'm going to start asking some of the longtime staff if they remember you. I'll get some stories.
Uh-oh.
I had a blast, man. I can't tell them. My wife's sitting next to me, so I definitely can't tell you the stories. But I had a phenomenal time there. It was a great time. Great food, great entertainment.
Oh, my God, the food is ridiculous. We were talking off the air about how people think of music when they think of House of Blues. You go have some drinks. But this food is this chicken waffle mix with the coleslaw and the cornbread.
It's amazing.
So you know what? Yeah. This is actually perfect for talking about finances because I'm feeling full. I'm kind of happy. Go ahead and terrify me. Is there anything good or terrifying you want to tell me about that's going on in the world of mortgages?
Well, when you think of mortgages, you obviously think of chicken and waffles. There's no other thing that you think about. The first thing that comes to your mind is chicken and waffles and blues music. No, listen, got a huge rush of calls this week. For cash out refinances, a lot of people, I think, are finally looking at their credit card bills and seeing, you know what, I've got equity in my home. And by the way, congratulations to the United States consumer. We've gone over the $1 trillion in credit card debt. So congratulations to the American consumer for putting, getting the economy back online by going out there and putting $1 trillion on your credit cards.
Okay, so, well, hold on a second. Now I need some Tums. David, I'm going to take a break here because, one, you freaked me out,
yeah, no
and
problem.
I got to hit this commercial. Will you be able to stay with us past the news?
Sure, no, yeah. I just, my dog just got stung, so I'm like, I just gave my dog a shower, so I'm up all night.
Oh, no. All right. Let's hang out with David Hochberg and his skunk dog when we come back on 720 WGN. Poor Pooch. I'm sorry.
I'm going to pop some tags. Only got $20 in my pocket. I'm a
David Hochberg joins us on the line. David, I didn't mean to cut you off earlier. You had some important information for folks about their mortgages. What were we talking about for Thrifty Thursday?
We were talking about congratulating the United States consumer for stopping $1 trillion on your credit card.
You can see how I might have mentally blocked that, right? How much? $1 trillion?
Yep. $1 trillion as a nation. So big, big party happening every single day for people carrying balances on the credit card. So I think the reality has set in. We have gotten bombed this week with people that are tired of carrying around those saddlebags of debt. And one gentleman had came down with Crohn's disease Was perfectly in great shape, got impacted, taken down by Crohn's disease, put on $40,000 on his credit card debt. Long story short, he's in his mid-50s, wife's in her mid-50s. They want all their debt paid off, currently in a 15-year fixed loan, which you know I'm not a big fan of, because if they weren't in a 15-year fixed loan, they still would have been in debt, but they'd be in less debt because they would have been able to take that money that was going towards paying off their home faster to pay down their debt instead. So they still would have been in debt, but you could have redirected the stream of water to put the fire out that's burning bright, which is your credit card debt. Long story short, wife didn't want to go back to a 30-year, wanted to stay in a 15, rolling everything that they own into a new 15-year fixed loan, paying off $80,000 worth of debt. $40,000 credit card debt, couple of cars, and a student loan payment, saving them $2,000 a month, and keeping them on a 15-year fixed payoff period. So thank God they have equity in the home. Thank God the guy's back healthy again. But there are ways to use the equity in your home to get yourself out of debt.
No kidding. I mean, that's the thing we were talking last time about, your student loans and things like that, and how you can roll it in. A lot of people have been, now that they're learning about it, are taking advantage of that. And so what is the process for that? Do they go and see someone like you?
Yeah, it's very simple. You pick up the phone and you dial 312-751-1333. We have people answering the phones 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Also, a lady called, loyal listener of your show,
yes,
saving her $500 a month doing what's called a HARP loan, home affordability refinance program that the government came out with during Bush 2, the final years of his presidency, which is expiring this fall. So the people that have HARP programs have HARP loans. She wasn't able to refinance a couple of months ago when she talked to us. Her financial situation is better. We're saving her and her family and kids $500 a month, refinancing her loan into a lower rate and just freeing up cash flow. So the savings are there. Patty, Scott, and Ryan, you gotta be proactive and do something. Get off your rear end and see what we could do. Listen, the worst thing we say is, no, we can't help you.
Right.
It's really that simple.
And that's the thing, is it? And not only that, but what would you tell somebody who is maybe doing all right, and they just have been renting for a long time? Is it better to, at this point, to rent? Is this a time, if you've been thinking about it, if you've wondered if I should buy property, is this a good time to do that?
Well, here, it's a great time to rent if you don't want to own, and it's a great time to own if you're tired of renting. It's a great time to own if you're tired of living in your parents' basement because you had a financial anomaly happen to you, and you got your feet steadily planted on the ground, and you've got money in the bank, and you know, property values go up 5-6% a year because there hasn't been any building going on in any type of bulk over the past 7 to 10 years like we had during 01 through 06, 07 before everything stopped. I mean, every cornfield you drove by, there were 50 to 100 houses being built on
there. Right.
We haven't had that happen in a bulk quantity basis since everything went to hell in a handbasket in 2008. So if you think about it, we really haven't had any type of major building going on. You know, you came into the city and went into your studio today. There's 50 crane booms downtown Chicago building everything from, the new McDonald's Corporation on Randolph.
Oh, that's right.
And all that going on, craziness going on in the West Loop, to condos going up and rentals going up. Why? Because people are moving back into the city and there's demand for housing stock. So is now a good time to buy a home? Listen, it's a great time to buy a home anytime that you have good credit. You have a foundation to withstand some type of economic anomaly, like a job loss, like a new furnace, like a new air conditioner that I had to put on my house after 16 years. Our air conditioner went out, $3,000-$5,000. You know, at least I've got the financial, you know, resources and reserves that when our air conditioner went out, when it was 70, 80 degrees a couple of weeks back, and we turned on, it didn't work, called my friends at Altemp that I went to high school with. They came out, put a new, unit in. But, you know, I was in a position to where I saved because I knew my air conditioner was going to drop dead eventually, and I had the money there to do it. You know, if you don't have the money to take care of emergencies that happen every single day, okay, windows break, garage doors don't open, Heaters go out, air conditioners go out, a refrigerator goes out. All this stuff costs money to fix and replace. So if you have the money to do it, we have a great program to offer your listeners and realtors out there, all you insomniac realtors out there. We will pre-approve you and your listeners to buy a home, even if you don't have a home. Typically, you need to have a property before you get a pre-approval. We will underwrite your loan for you for free. We're not going to charge you.
Ooh.
So you know that the price of the home that you could buy. So when you go out and get into your realtor's car and you find a home, we could close that loan within 10 days. And because we've done the underwriting, we've already looked at your pay stubs, your bank statements, your W-2s, your 401ks, all your debt and everything else. We give you a letter to say, Patty, guess what? You could buy up to a $400,000 home with 20% down because that's what you want to put down. So a $320,000 mortgage, as long as your taxes and insurance don't exceed this number, you could go buy a home. So when your realtor takes you out and you find that home, you could put an offer in during attorney review period. It's usually a week. We order the appraisal, get the appraisal back. Hopefully nothing's wrong with the house. Once we get the appraisal back, you pass attorney review, boom, clear to close. We can close your loan in under 10 days. And then that way there's no mystery. There's no surprises. You know exactly what you could buy when you go out into the, with the realtor into the house looking for homes.
And where can people go to find out more information about that?
Very simple. You go to WGNDavid.com. New podcast. We did a new podcast today on WGN. What are they calling that now?
WGN Plus?
WGN Plus. We just did, there's four or five different podcasts up, and we're posting one every Thursday. So if your listeners want to check out the experiences of other listeners, they could go there and get that information.
Awesome.
Cool.
Appreciate that. So go to WGN
Anytime.
Plus. Yeah, for the podcast. David, we'll talk to you. I promise we'll have more time next week. Everything got kind of shoved.
Go. I appreciate the opportunity.
No, David, we are grateful for your time.
And how's your dog, by the way?
Oh, yeah, how is your dog?
My dog smells like a skunk's rear end. How do you think a dog's going to be? Forget about my dog. What about me? I got to go shower with my dog.
Are you bathing in tomato juice?
Yeah, my dog is great. Hydrogen peroxide and smell like skunk.
You don't try tomato juice. Apparently works, right?
Yeah. But listen, anytime you have to shower with your dog is a problem. And when you shower with your dog at 11:35 at night after he gets freaking shot in the face by some skunk gunk, yeah, it's not a good night, Scott, okay? It'll be great.
But you got to spend it with Patty and me.
Yeah, and you can give us a call back later. If you're still awake at 1 a.m., yeah, right. Call back and we'll talk some more.
Yeah, and save me some chicken and waffles, man, because I'm starving. I'll be down there about 40 minutes.
Yeah, come on down. Don't bring the dog, though, okay?
I won't bring the dog. I'll leave the dog at home.
Thanks, David. Go to WGNDavid.com for more information. Good night, David. We are going to check in with our friends David Osborne and Paul Morris when we come back after this break. They are the authors of Wealth Can't Wait. 312-981-7200. Join us anytime. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, hanging out with Ryan Shea, the general manager of the House of Blues. They've got their great event coming up tomorrow night. Local brews, local grooves, amazing food, music, and beer. We've also got Scott Santis, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and editorial board member. On the line with us are the New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestselling authors David Osborne and Paul Morris. They've written Wealth Can't Wait. David, Paul, I'm not sure that it's waiting. I just think that it's doesn't know that I'm here, doesn't know where to find me. No, you're saying be more. This obviously means be more proactive. Don't think, well, in 20 years, I'm sure by then I'll have money. Is that kind of the idea?
Patty, for the number one difference between wealthy people and not wealthy people is purposefulness towards building wealth. So what we encourage people to do and what we lay out in the book is sort of how to live a life by design.
Okay.
And the sooner you live a life by design, then the faster you'll get to your wealth. So I'd ask you, if you're feeling behind on that, how often do you spend thinking about your financial future?
It's define thinking about it or wondering. I mean, there's a difference between thinking and wondering about it, right?
Not panicking. I'm talking about, okay, how am I going to get to my future?
Right.
And one of the things that we talk about is a great metaphor, which is ground game versus air game. And ground game is what you do in your job every single day. You go in, you grind it out, and work hard, do a great job. And taking the time to get the 20,000-foot view and see, am I on the right course? Am I going where I want to go? Is air game. And we spend most of our time in ground game. It takes really only sort of one purposeful hour a week or maybe even a month, and we'd be ahead in terms of that planning and view.
And then I don't have to think about the rest of the month, because if I could just confine it to like 1 hour a month and not have the random moments of sheer panic pop up in the middle of that would be fine.
That's all we really ask is 1 hour a month and having a plan. So you lay out your plan, and 1 hour a month, you go, I'm on track with my plan. Now, how many people actually do that? Very few. But if you do it, you'll be ahead. And of the top 10% wealthy people in the U.S., they probably do it far more than the people that aren't wealthy, for sure.
Well, okay. So, and you could just put that in your calendar, Scott, and then you have an alarm that says, this is your hour.
Yeah.
Go.
Oh, now?
Yeah.
Damn.
We find it. Usually, we recommend a quiet, peaceful time when you're gonna got a little space in your life.
Right. Figure out what.
We find it,
like, right. Go ahead, guys. Sorry.
We find that if you have a plan, you write it out, and you never look at it again for a whole year, that's certainly less than optimal. And yet, we find that people that have a plan, write it out one time, have a much greater chance of hitting their goals than if you don't take the time even once a year. So definitely more optimal. I love your idea of putting in the calendar. It's a great way to do it. And just look at the plan. Am I on course, off course? What adjustments can I make? And bringing that into awareness will really change everything for you.
And so what are some of the steps? You want to say something, Scott?
Well, I was just going to jump in and say one of the things you mentioned in the book is how to avoid the 7 wealth traps. And I was wondering if you guys could tell us what some of those are.
Sure. The first one is the cushy job trap, and this is quite common. You know, you'll see a guy or a gal get caught in a job where they're making a good amount of money. I don't know about you guys, but when I got out of college and my first job paid me $50,000 a year, I thought I was rich. I was like going to the bank with my $5,000 a month paycheck and celebrating the whole way and then spending it every weekend in the bars. But
I can just jump in and just tell you that Patty and I are both making that sweet, sweet radios, and I'm making that amazing, sick newspaper money.
I don't know who made that noise, but I'm going to need that on a loop.
Another one is to make sure you don't fall into a job that looks after your needs in many ways, all except for your wealth needs. So an example is the ski instructor that loves his life, but doesn't take time to set up an alternative so that when the knees give out at age 40 or 50 or so, he's got another plan set up. And that's where the air game comes in. You spend an hour a week. You can still ski. You can still have your cushy job. Just do a little bit more and be purposeful towards building wealth as well as having fun.
Yeah, sure. No, that makes complete sense. Go ahead.
And another one is avoiding risk. We also talk about another one of the wealth traps is giving up. And they are pretty closely related. We find that people are so afraid of making a mistake that they stay on the sidelines. And of course, the greatest risk, the greatest mistake you can make is not jumping in at all. Because if you jump in and you make an error, at least you learn from that. And that goes along with another wealth trap, which is just, you know, people take a step in, they put money into the stock market, it goes down, they're burned. They're like, that's it for that. For that type of investment. And really, resilience is very important. And we really look at wealth building as being a process, not an event. So our book is not about an overnight grand slam. It's more about what do we do now for the next year, 2 years, 4 years, 5 years. We tend to really underestimate what we can accomplish over a long period of time and overestimate what we think we should be able to accomplish quickly. And that ties into those traps.
And so what are so when you say, a way to achieve a goal within a year, 3 years or 5 years, what are some of the steps somebody can take to sort of rein in? Is it about, you know, being mindless about your spending? Is it about having, you know, having attainable goals? What are some of the steps?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the first step is to go find a killer. It's really fun, actually. You just go find a nice space, a place you like, a coffee shop, a library, wherever it is that's quiet and you can have some alone time. and you just kind of write out where you want to go in 5 years. Start with a future, like where do I want to be in 5 years? And then kind of draw that back to the present and then do a life audit. And we put the life audit tools in the back of the book. And the life audit just says, okay, so if you want to have, say, 10,000 a year coming in passive income in 5 years, where are you today? That's the life audit. That's being real with yourself. And if you're at minus 10,000 a year right now because your credit card debt's so high, then you've got to do some fundamental steps to fix that. And just having that viewpoint of where you want to go and then pausing and looking at where you actually are, doing that life audit, even if you are in the negative territory, you can then get some resources such as Dave Ramsey's stuff or different people's stuff to sort of fix that negative 10 and get to zero. And you might need to go from a 5-year plan to a 10-year plan, but you can get there. But the point is that by taking that time and giving it to yourself, where you say, where do I want to go and where am I now, you can start drawing out the steps that will get you to that 5-year plan. You got to start with that vision of where you want to go and then tweak it. And it's kind of fun because you're in a way just designing the life you want to live. You're designing your own future.
And now I'm going to be honest. I have no debt, but I'm not great with, and I have, you know, I have my retirement, my 401k through work, and I've put away some money here and there, but I'm not great at having a plan. And I'm not quite sure what's the difference between an asset-based or cash-based living.
Yeah. So
do you have a house, Patty?
No.
Okay. Well, so
he's like, okay, so she doesn't have debt.
So you're doing great that you have managed so much of it so well, and you might want to think about adding some assets. There's not a single person on the Forbes 400 list of billionaires that doesn't have $1 billion worth of assets. That's how you get there. And ultimately, all wealthy people own assets. So what you want to do is own great assets. Paul, go ahead.
No, and I think, David, I think your point, it's a great question, is one of the ways that the average American builds the most wealth is through home ownership. So you're paying to live when you're paying rent, and if you go and buy a home, your mortgage, your payment, what otherwise would be rent, is now building an asset for you. And over a long period of time, historically, that asset is just going to rise. You can give yourself a great head start by buying a value add asset, and what that is, It's a little cliche, but it definitely works, and that's buying the worst house in the best neighborhood. So you go to a great neighborhood, you buy a fixer upper, you move in. There's going to be a lot of upside in there built into that particular asset. So that would be a great first step.
Is to buy, and I've heard this before. Actually, a friend of mine who's a comedian, because I know you also have in here how to save money with an inconsistent income, and comics would definitely fall on that list. My friend Kathleen Madigan, who people might be familiar with, when she started to make a little money, she did that. She said she bought the worst house in the best neighborhood, and you know, just slowly started making it a nicer place. So it makes sense.
Hey, it's not by accident that people that own a lot of real estate often get financially free. There's been more money made in real estate than any other place. And that's because, like, I was a D student. I wasn't that bright in school, but I've been able to become very financially successful and financially free because of real estate. Because you just buy that house, you move into it, then it tends to go in your favor. Like, time generally moves real estate up. I know we had a crash recently that was pretty extreme, but generally, if you buy real estate, it goes up. And if you live in a home for a while and then it gets paid down somewhat, what we encourage people to do is, instead of selling that home, move to another home and then keep that first home and turn it into a rental. The majority of Americans' wealth is in their homes. So okay. I always ask people, why don't you own two homes? But for you, I'd say, why don't you own one home?
I know. No, I've been thinking about it a lot lately. I just, again, because I have a precarious, I have an inconsistent, it's feast or famine in a career like mine. So that's why I have to be a little more cautious about a long-term debt. That's why
Yeah, one other step, Patty, and this is tough, but I know people don't like it, but if you bought, say, a two-bedroom house, rent out one of the rooms. And then if things get tough, you could always move back into an apartment and rent out the other room. You could actually rent the property. As long as the rental income exceeds the payment, you really don't have to worry about that asset becoming a risk.
It's very tough to do with two kids, one of whom has special needs, and a husband. Yeah. So, all that stuff. Yeah. No, it sounds
good. There are still ways to do that. I have a friend building wealth who's on a steady salary, and he bought a triplex, and his family lives in the front house, which has got a lot more room, but they have 2 1 bedroom sort of over the garage, and that provides that sort of income opportunity and wealth building opportunity for him.
Exactly. Well, you guys have such. Yes, go ahead.
One other thing, Patty, another idea for you, because we're helping you now, is if you got that one house with your two kids and your lovely husband, and as long as you, before you bought it, run the rent comps. And if the rent comps exceed your mortgage payment by, say, a few $100, including interest, taxes, all expenses, a little bit for repairs, then the worst thing happens, you suddenly get financially jolted, you lose a job, or some income goes down. You move out, immediately turn it into a rental, and you're really not worse off as long as you've done that little bit of analysis before you chose the house you bought.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. makes complete sense. So where can people find your book, Wealth Can't Wait? Is this available?
Wealth Can't Wait. Yeah, we have wealthcan'twait.com. You can find us. It's also, the book is available on Amazon, and they were running a special Kindle version for 99 cents.
Ooh.
And you can find me at paul@morrisx.com, and David will give you his email address. You have a phenomenal radio listening group. We were listening in on some of the previous segments, and we'd love to hear from your folks and give them advice like we were giving you. Happy to help. And David, do you want to give them your email as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, just go to wealthcan'twait.com. And Patty, it's been great interviewing with you. You're a great interviewer.
Oh, you guys are kind. No, we'd love to have you on again and perhaps take some calls from listeners, because this really was kind of a Patty intervention there at the end. And I appreciate it. And I'll just I'll go have my panic attack during the break. I'm fine. No, I
well,
these are things.
You can reach out to us as well directly. We'll help you directly.
Oh, I love that. I'm gonna download download the Kindle version of your book right now. It's Wealth Can't Wait. We've been talking to David Osborne and Paul Morris. You guys, thank you so much for staying up late. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Have a great night. More after this on 720 WGN. You're I just got all choked up, because I don't think that Michael Heidemann knows that this was the music we used to play for Senator Dan Katowski when we would do It Ought to Be a Law. And so now we can use it for Rich Lenkoff, because I think it's perfect.
Yeah.
Senator Katowski's off tonight.
Every shortlist has his name on it now.
Shortlist?
For governor, running for governor. His name is on almost every list now. Yes. I'm not kidding.
Rich, I didn't mean to bring you into this conversation. I just got blindsided by my...
We can talk about it later.
We're not going to talk about it at all, unless the senator wants to talk about
it.
We'll talk to Rich Lenkoff. Rich, how are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you, Patty?
I'm very well. Rich Lenkoff, of course, the more talented, more handsome half of Legal Face Off with Jason Whiteside, which you can find on WGNplus.com. Rich, tell us about Benny the... And by the way, is Jason going to hunt me down sometime? Am I legally going to be in trouble somehow by constantly saying that?
You are already. I mean, Jason is writing the complaint. He has the all of the shout-outs as evidence. So, yeah, he'll be suing you and the entire program pretty soon.
Until we're in court and he has to prove that he's not the less intelligent, less attractive.
Exactly.
Right. And by the way, that was my contention last night. Can we just talk about the FCC and Stephen Colbert? I know we didn't plan on talking about this, did we? About the investigation into his content on The Late Show?
Right.
I contend that if I were to defend that case, I would say, well, then the president has to prove he's not that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as you know, the truth is the main defense to any libel or slander allegation. So, yeah. Exactly.
Right. I'm telling you.
No. There is a very famous case from, of all places, mid 19th century France, where the King Louis Philippe was drawn as a pear, and it was brought to court. And the artist said, you know, he looks like, and he demonstrated in court.
Yeah.
He said, he looks like a pear.
Right.
And the judge said,
we. Well, and I think that the photos today with the Russian press in the Oval Office, it would be very hard to prove that he's not that thing.
Did you hear their excuse for this? Because
we'll talk about it later.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, Rich.
Sorry, Rich.
Benny the Bull is being sued. Am I reading this correctly? And is he known as Benny the Bull in court?
He is. He is. That is the formal legal name, Benny the Bull. Yeah.
Okay.
Being sued by a former employee of the Bulls who says that the mascot used her as a crutch. During one of the playoff games a couple of years ago, the actor, who's actually the one being sued, plus the Bulls, got hurt, injured his ankle, and on the way off the court, the allegation goes, he put his big furry paw on her to use her for some support, and in the process, she's claiming that she got injured. So, yeah, Benny's being taken for all the big fake money he's got, I guess.
Why would, I mean, like, I get that you're injured, but I'm not sure why you reach up and grab onto a woman that's on the court as well and push down it. I mean, I know what he's talking about, you know, where you push on somebody, but you do that with somebody who's offered to help you, right? Not just,
in his defense, I'm sure it's kind of hard to see out of those big fuzzy eyes.
when you're a bull, it's a little difficult.
Injured ankle, he's probably sweating, he might have like urinated on himself at some point. It's probably pretty hard to see what you're doing as you leave the court.
So can he then, if he's being held responsible for that, then because he can't, I'm guessing there's something in his contract that he can't take his big bull head off, then can he then sue?
That would scare the children.
It would scare the children. Since he couldn't see and he was prevented from seeing because of, as you mentioned, the mascot head, can he then make the Bulls responsible or the United Center responsible for that?
Ah, interesting question. Now you get to the hard legal part of the Benny the Bull story. Yeah, I mean, the theory in suing the mascot and the Bulls is that he was acting as their agent, and therefore the Bulls are responsible, right? The plaintiff wants to go after the deep-pocketed Bulls organization, not just this individual who probably, you know, doesn't have a lot of means to pay. The Bulls would probably argue that he was acting outside the scope of his agency when he did this. In other words, the Bulls, you know, pay him to entertain the crowd, to dance, to do whatever, not to grab onto someone. Now that's, you know, who knows if they'll argue that, but typically in these kind of cases, to avoid liability, the employer would probably argue that the employee was acting outside the scope of his agency. So the employee who's being sued would definitely argue that he was just acting as the Bulls employee and he's not responsible. And the Bulls, again, might turn around and say, well, you know, when you did this, you acted outside the scope of what we paid you to do.
And this is not the first time. You want to say something?
No, I'm just thinking this is so stupid.
It's not the first time he's been sued. Benny the Bull, this is like his third or fourth time being sued.
Way too much legal analysis for a mascot lawsuit. I agree.
No, but there was a high five that went awry a few years ago.
Oh, come on.
In 2008, Naperville Dentist sued the Bulls and Anderson. Was Anderson the mascot at the time? Yes. It's the same guy, Barry Anderson. Guy.
He's been the mascot for a while.
Every couple of years, you'll see people sue mascots for injuries they say happened during the game. The
Does it not worry them that they look like idiots? Hey, John, what's going on? Yeah. Well, I'm suing Benny the Bull.
Yeah.
It's like, really?
Yeah, I'm suing the Philly fanatic. I mean, that stuff happens all the time. Yeah, I agree. It's complete nonsense. I mean, as someone who defends lawsuits like this all the time, I think it's usually pretty dumb.
Really, it's very silly. We have a bunch of more cases to talk about when we come back, including the Fry Festival. I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at rich kids being taken.
You are a little bit.
I'm a little bit. And the Hernandez case and whether or not that the conviction can be vacated, the murder conviction. Can you hang on, Rich, for another segment?
Sure. Yeah,
excellent. We're hanging out with Rich Lenkov. You can go to WGNplus.com to hear Legal Face-Off every week. Jason Whiteside, that other guy, plus the more talented, more handsome Rich Lenkov. They take on the legal issues of the week. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Scott Stantis, the political cartoonist and editorial board member for Chicago Tribune. And it turns out that he and I are the only ones on the show right now with a microphone right now,
yes.
And on the phone that doesn't have a law degree.
Yeah.
Is what that turns out. Rich Lenkoff joins us on the line. He is, of course, the more talented and more intellectually elevated member of the legal face-off with Jason Whiteside. I really need to stop amping that up, don't I, Rich?
Well, I just give those law degrees away, by the way, as evidenced by Jason Whiteside.
See, this is what I'm saying. Also joining us in studio is comedian Paul Farivar, Esquire, and Ryan Shea, general manager of the House of Blues, also Esquire.
Esquire.
Yeah, so you and I, only just you and me,
Scott. I got
nothing
after my name.
We got nothing after our names. I really... I
feel morally superior, if there's a way to say that.
You're not. So, Rich, maybe. You keep eating that mac and cheese from the House of Blues because it is so, so, so good. Rich, you got to come in sometime and eat with us.
I want to, yeah, for sure.
Excellent. I want to, I'm trying to decide between, okay, I think the Hernandez murder conviction that they're trying to vacate. Why? Okay, so the football player, I'm not even sure I understand any of this. It's all kind of one of those things that's background noise to me. Tell us a little bit about what happened.
So a judge this past week basically erased the conviction against Aaron Hernandez. He found that, according to case law in Massachusetts, defendants who die before the appeals are heard have their convictions vacated. So there's about 12 or 13 states that follow this law. The logic being, because the case wasn't finalized, in other words, because Hernandez's conviction didn't make its way through the appellate process before he died, then his conviction should be vacated. Because, you know, it wasn't adjudicated. Lots of people think that this is ridiculous because it almost rewards people who kill themselves. Not that that's, you know, why you would kill yourself, probably, to vacate the conviction, but, you know, that's what happened in this case. Yeah, lots of people unhappy with that, among the many bizarre twists in the Aaron Hernandez story.
It is, and one of the things that Scott said off the air is that if this was just some guy from, you know, from Inglewood,
with the last name Hernandez,
right, from Pilsen
or South Central LA,
right, they would not have the opportunity to have their conviction vacated.
Well, actually, that's actually ironically, I think, not the case, because I think their hands were tied because of precedence, at least according to what the judge said. This is Bristol County Superior Court Judge Susan Garsh said she had to follow precedent because that's what the case law says, that it doesn't really matter why you die or how you die. According to case law in Massachusetts, the fact that you die, whether it be by suicide or any other way, before your appeal is done, you have to have your sentence vacated.
Yes, Paul.
And that's, going back to your Pilsen statement, the only reason it's different here, Rich, if I'm right, is because there's consequences, too, for the money that his family can now get, right?
Well, so that's a good question. I mean, there is a pending civil suit that I don't think will be affected, according to what I've read and my understanding of the case law. The fact that the criminal conviction is now vacated should not affect Odin Lloyd's mother from pursuing her wrongful death lawsuit. At least that's what her attorney says. Her attorney is a guy named Douglas Sheff, and he's come out and said that he doesn't believe the civil case would be undermined by the dismissal. So, you know, I think in reality, it doesn't have an effect, and you know, practical effect. Sounds like Hernandez had nothing anyway. By most accounts, all he had was his house, which was worth about $1.3 million, which is not nothing. And he also had a Hummer. But besides that, according to court papers that were filed last month, they said his estate was worth zero.
Well, now, Patty was reading the story to me during the break. Now, the law is also from, like,
is it a medieval, from when Massachusetts, not medieval, when Massachusetts, what's it? Massachusetts was a colony.
Right.
Is so what I was reading
this
as well.
Is like,
it's a really old law. So that's why, you know, a lot of people feel that it's pretty anachronistic, and it's part of a different era. And I think that's why so few states follow it anymore. But nonetheless, you know, as all the lawyers in the room know, old case law and old, you know, statutes are still valid.
I want to ask you about the Fry Festival, but we ran out of time. Is it Fire Festival? I don't know. Yeah. I don't have that kind of money to spend. I have no idea how to pronounce it either.
Heidemann goes to every single festival. He should know all about it.
Michael, if you had money and you saw the advertisements for this, was this the kind of festival you would have wanted to go to?
Well, being a huge Ja Rule fan like I am, I wouldn't miss anything that he does. But for this one, the price point was so high. I think the tickets were about $20,000, like $12,000 to $20,000.
I thought you were going to ask him if he was mad when he got down there.
I just like the way
I give them the benefit of doubt all the time, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'd make this festival, to be honest. Would any of you, to be honest?
I don't go to music festivals.
No way.
Oh.
No.
I'm old.
I just like to bury booze all over Millennium Park just for fun. And I don't care. I don't
for
care
later.
What it is. Yeah.
In case
for
of emergency.
Never. Just for never.
I just like the way that Mike said Ja Rule. Like he stopped and then said it like Ja Rule and then continue with the sentence. It's like when a Spanish person said when they do like a broadcast and then they had the one English word, like
yes.
That's how you sounded. It was like
Señor
Donde
Ja Rule?
La Salle Avenue. And like that's what you sounded like.
Well,
you
that's,
said,
that's the kind of respect that I give the man. I mean, to be honest, to put on such a great festival and to do all these good things. Rich knows, so
no,
yeah.
I prefer you call him Jeffrey Atkins.
Is that his real name?
That's what it says in this article. Oh, his real name is Jeffrey Atkins.
It's like Lord Voldemort, the name that cannot be spoken.
That might be the worst thing for him out of this whole thing is that his real name came out. Perhaps.
Yeah, Rich. That Atkins. They have to name him legally in the as the defendants, right?
Yeah, AKA yeah, I mean, Ja Rule.
The residual checks from appearing in the original Fast and Furious could only last so long.
Well, yeah, I don't blame folks. Obviously, this was going to be a big legal case because, well, one, there's a lot of people with a lot of money, and it does look as though it was a Ponzi scheme to attract people to spend a lot of money, and they basically ran through all of their money on models and all kinds of stuff before anybody even got there. Isn't that what happened?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like it was anything close to what was advertised or what was promised. You know, I saw the picture of the
gourmet.
The bread and cheese that disappointed so many of the concert goers. So, you know, there's lawyers that are going to make a lot of money on this class action, I think. And the question, of course, is going to be whether there's any money to collect from the likes of Ja Rule.
Jeffrey Atkins. Rich Lenkoff, thank you again for joining us. It's always great to catch up with you. And everyone should go to WGNplus.com to hear Rich Lenkoff and the other guy on Legal Face-Off, Jason Whiteside. Rich, have a great night. Thank you so much, really, for staying up so late. I'm very grateful.
Thanks, Patty. Appreciate it. See you guys.
Thank you. More after this. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studios on Michigan Avenue. Joining me is comedian Paul Farvar, Esquire. Congratulations on your appearance tonight on Chicago Med.
Thank you.
Very exciting.
Yes.
So we thought to celebrate, we would ask our friend Ryan Shea from House of Blues, the general manager, to bring a whole box of food. This is all really for you. And also because they have a great event tomorrow night, which is the Local Brews, Local Grooves event that starts at 5 p.m. That's like 18 hours from now or whatever. Just get ready. Just go line up right now.
I think I'm just going to stay up.
I think you should. No, don't do that. It's not healthy for you. And we also have, so that's Ryan from the House of Blues. And we also have Scott Santis, the political cartoonist and editorial board member for the Chicago Tribune. Thank you. This food is,
oh my God, so good.
Yeah, you drove down here because you could tell from our voices how hungry.
Yeah, I heard a little. I'm like, oh, so you guys have food? And then when you told me what it was, I was like, all right, I'm going to come.
First I told him it was bacon and that wasn't enough. But I said there was mac and cheese and sliders.
Mac and cheese did it.
The mac and cheese did it?
Yeah, and it was amazing.
Oh my God. So put a little bit of the slider pork, the pulled pork on the mac and cheese.
Fine.
I'm just saying. Or put the mac and cheese on your slider.
I'll do that.
All right. It's very good. It's super tasty.
And only because you're asking me to try some more food.
You can enjoy a lot of that food. The spicy chicken waffle cone, the beef brisket sandwich, the beer, the bacon. Bacon.
I haven't had the bacon.
Bacon, yes. It's bacon in a can.
Oh, that's what that was.
Yes.
Okay.
Loaded mac and cheese, the great egg rolls. And then when you're there, you can also build your own nachos and build your own grilled cheese. And that all starts at 5 o'clock. A lot of local brewers, including, of course, Lagunitas, Revolution, Two Brothers, Metropolitan, which we are enjoying in studio, the Flywheel Lager. Very tasty. Thank you.
Good stuff.
And the Zombie Dust.
Superb.
There you go. And the Daisy Cutter Pale Ale.
Also good.
Mike, how's your grub going? Is it gone?
It is gone 20 minutes ago. I was so delicious. And that Zombie Dust is great. Daisy Cutter, you can't go wrong with that kind of beer. The House of Blues has some of the best food in the city. So very, very lucky to be here tonight.
Plus some great music. You have Nasty Snacks. Come on, that's a great name for a band.
Nasty Snacks. So
Nasty Snacks.
Bad name for food, good name for a band.
Rollover, the North 40, the North 41, pardon me, the Blue Olives, all performing as part of the local brews, local grooves. And plus, don't forget their Mother's Day gospel brunch this Sunday. They have several seatings, but the 10 a.m. and the 12:30 have some single seats.
Yes.
So, Paul, I mean, you're not going to hang out with your mom anyway because she harangues you about being single. So go hang out at the House of Blues.
Yeah, maybe I will on Sunday.
And then you can call the
gospel brunch.
And you can also call that church that is you can just call me and I'll tell you that you're a good son and that everything's going to be fine. I'm very proud of you and all the work that you've done. You're taking chances in your career.
I'm just imagining you being my mom, but you just don't have the accent down, so it doesn't really fit.
Can I do my mom's accent?
Yeah.
You are a wonderful human being, Paul.
Thanks, Mom.
I am so proud of all the work you are doing.
That actually hit home. I like that. You know, they didn't even call me after the scene today, too.
Did they watch it?
They watched it, and then I was like, oh, maybe they'll forward it on Facebook, the scene. But my mom forwarded a recipe to her friends instead.
The screenshot that you sent me, you look very you look very grim. You look very. Is that when you were saying thank you to the nurse?
I think so. I haven't like had a chance to see it. The people sent me. I got a lot of pictures.
Great?
Yeah, it was kind of cool.
So cool because people. So. Here's the thing: when people, your friends, like when I see my friends on TV, I scream.
Yeah, I got
so
excited.
So there, you made people scream tonight.
Yeah, maybe. Or
did.
Yell. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll Paul. Yeah. That. Sorry, everybody.
There were some.
That was me thinking of seeing you on TV.
People that took pictures and morphed them into other things, which were pretty inappropriate to send to you.
What?
So,
like what?
Yeah, my friends are jerks. Like they just there's like pictures of me with different objects near my face.
Like you're holding something for Putin.
Yeah. Some sort of. Can I say?
Ruby's not.
Holster?
Prove he's not. Yes.
Yeah, holster. I didn't. I didn't have. There was some fun stuff in there.
All right then.
I won't be forwarding.
Am I dancing around the other things well enough legally? By the way, words and comments about.
Well, now that Rich is gone, I am the resident legal expert. I know Ryan
is also.
Yeah.
Although not practicing.
I pledge to know nothing.
He prides himself on not being the expert, but I think Scott. I think he has more legal knowledge than most people in this room, including myself.
About libel and or what you can say?
Oh, yeah, probably. About what you can get away with humor?
Well, they're changing the libel laws, according to with Sessions.
So what about... We haven't even talked about the woman that laughed and was found guilty of laughing.
And sentenced for a year,
and disturbing
right?
the... Well, was she sentenced to a year? No. Can you imagine being in jail? You know, you're in jail with like a... Come on. With like, you know,
you
a murderer. Yeah, a bank robber. What are you in for? I laughed.
I giggled. Oh, what is that code for? No. It was
and
a laugh.
I giggled during a...
Laugh.
Giggled
at the attention. Is that some kind of like drug on the street or something? Yeah. You laughed?
No one will sit next to the laugher in jail. Yeah.
No one's. That's the trick.
I think she did more than... I mean, I definitely think it's ridiculous, but I thought that there was some disruptions and nonsense. They got her on a technicality, I think. But... She should have. She's going to appeal that, I hope, and get her lawyer.
I'm going to go to jail someday just for laughing. You weren't here yesterday. Were you here when I told the story about...
No.
I'm pretty sure I ended President Cullerton's press conference yesterday by laughing. I thought he was kidding.
Oh, God.
And he wasn't.
What did you do?
What
did you do, Patty? I didn't hear this.
This is after the grand bargain imploded. This was not my fault. When the grand bargain imploded in the Senate, which was a 13-part package, two items of which they had all agreed, the Democrats and the Republicans had all agreed on all the elements. They had come to a compromise. They had worked on it for 71 days. The minority Senate leader, Redonio, pulled two elements, the workman. Okay, anyway. So he immediately, they come over, and the press secretary says he's going to do a press conference in the Blue Room, which is down in the basement, three floors down. So I go running down there to catch up with the real journalists. I'm like, oh, we'll see what happens. Then everyone's asking him questions, and he explains what happens. And then he says, well, I'm going to go talk to the governor right now. And I went, and he just looked up, and he walked out of the room. And I thought it was, so apparently that was, yeah, he wasn't so, kidding. He wasn't kidding.
As you're walking to your car tonight.
So as it turns out, no, it turns out he did. He and Redonio did spend an hour talking to the governor.
You
and
have a right not to giggle.
I thought he was kidding. I'm going to talk to the governor right now. There you are.
Just show him the picture of you smiling next to him. The smirk picture.
Fortunately, he came to the event that I was at last night, and he seemed to be very nice and congenial. But yeah, someone asked me, there was that you laughing? I'm like, I thought he was kidding. I thought he was making with a fun. No, he was not.
That's
was,
like when you ask someone when they're due and they're not really pregnant, and you're like, oh.
You were kidding. It was quite awful. I thought I was helping him. Look at the president of the Senate.
You thought you were helping him? What, you were?
I thought I was, because he made a joke. I'm like,
you're fluffing the laugh track. What
I know.
Are you,
I'm like, hey,
about?
No, nobody else thought that was funny. No. What amused me even more is all the journalists that were like, do you think he's really gonna go up there? And I was like, I go, let's follow him. And like nobody moved, and I just got my backpack and I walked up to the governor's office, and that's when I put in my request to have an interview with the governor. And that's when we went through the whole, well, you go to illinois.gov and you scroll down and you go to contact us.
And we can see your facial expressions right now.
I know.
So it doesn't give us much justice. Oh, yeah, that's true.
And she said, just click on contact us. And I said, I'm standing here. And I thought that was the process of contacting you.
Doesn't count as contacting.
I did not see the president in the governor's office at that point.
You're lucky you weren't arrested.
I would say that's when he walked, he stormed out. And I thought, I thought he was kidding.
And it's right after you
He looked over at me for the direction of where the laughter was coming from. And then he walked out.
Did the rest of the journalists give you the stink eye or?
There was certainly a silence fell across the room, and it was uncomfortable.
Do you need me to give you your mom speech back to you?
Yeah, like, no.
I'm very
I think,
proud of you.
I think I they
would have my mom's accent.
They would have approached me immediately, don't you think? Yeah, I don't know. I guess journalists don't laugh. It is weird in the press box because I forget. Like I'm in the media, and so when like there's anything that happens, like the media doesn't applaud. They don't like I.
Right.
I half the time, okay, I will talk about this when we come back. I got to tell you about some hazing. I don't know if I should tell you this story because they asked me to pull my tweet down. More after this on 720 wow. WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Ryan Shea, the general manager of the House of Blues, bringing by some great food that is going to be featured tomorrow night for their Local Brews, Local Grooves event starting at 5 o'clock, and really some great food. Do you have a favorite Scott Santas yet
of these things? The egg roll, the spicy egg roll?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I think it's the mac and cheese.
But the mac and cheese. I mean, I made a face.
Esmeralda, what do you? I know you did make a face, and it made me uncomfortable.
Sorry. I did enjoy the bacon. Mm-hmm. It's bacon. Those sliders were delicious, but yeah, that mac and cheese.
I know,
so good.
I'm usually not a big mac and cheese eater, but that was delicious.
That's real. I'm putting it on the waffle cone too.
Mac and cheese is making a comeback. It's everywhere.
Where did
it go?
I
didn't think it was ever gone.
Yeah, I didn't think it went anywhere. Mike, do you have a favorite?
Yes, I think that the bacon was crispier than I've ever had in a slice of bacon taste.
Interesting.
Before, and that was really good. But then again, you know, again, shout out to the zombie dust.
It goes good with bacon.
It does go very well with mm-hmm. bacon.
Very tasty.
Esmeralda, I had a moment in the Senate yesterday. I was in the press box, and there was a senator that rose to introduce some legislation that would require a Google app to also translate to Spanish. I didn't quite get the components of it because it immediately turned into a he said that certain words don't translate well. Okay, that was you this time, just so you know. I the crinkling.
That was
sorry.
Scott.
I was trying to be discreet.
So he rose. His last name is Aquino, right? Or Aquino? Now I don't even know because it became such a point of contention on the floor of the Senate. They were making fun of his name because he said, like, if my name is Aquino, but if you look, if it's translated, it could also be translated into not here. right? So then they spent, like, they started making fun of him and said, so you're not here. And they started mocking him. And then, like, all these legislators started standing up and saying, well, why does it be Spanish? Why can't we make sure that it's also Gaelic? And what about French? And they, and like, they all, like, for half an hour, Esmeralda, they were, like, just harassing the senator. And I was, I almost jumped out of the press box because I was like, hermano, let's go. We can do, I'll take him with you. They're giving you a hard time.
I just can't believe they're like, why not in Gaelic?
Well, so here was the thing. It was his first bill. So they do this. It's a hazing thing. So they, like, mercilessly debate with you and pull it apart and mock you. I mean, the tone was so bizarre. I was like, this, I had never seen anything like it. And I'm like, okay, a bunch of white folks just jumping on the Latino dude. And it was really uncomfortable. So I tweeted out that I don't know what's happening with the grand bargain, but the Senate is wasting time ruthlessly mocking Senator Aquino. And so later on, they were like, no, that was hazing. I'm like, I'm leaving my tweet up. I don't care.
Really? That was their response? No, it's cool. It's hazing.
Well, I've told you, I've seen them do stuff where I'm like, really, we're going to spend 2 hours on cheering about the Cubs because the trophy's here, and then you're gonna adjourn for the day, or you're going to spend 3 hours saluting somebody who's retiring. You couldn't rent a banquet hall to do this.
Your tax dollar at work.
So again, can we film in there?
Yeah.
Because that should probably be happening.
It is. It, you know what? All of it is available online. If you go to IL, you know, the woman at the governor's office can tell you exactly
same
where
place
to find
it. Contact the governor.
It's actually IL.gov.
Say it like the governor's secretary.
So you just, okay, so you go to Illinois.gov and see how you, so then you click on government and then you scroll. See how you, yeah, you scroll. You scroll
all
the way down.
Do you know what scrolling is?
Scroll all the way down. seriously, I was like, could you not turn that screen? I know how to go to a website. I know how to find contact us. Like, I really, I've never, I love standing in front of somebody and going, you understand the irony here, right? I am contacting
right
you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, to be fair, they may have seen, she may have seen your phone.
My Wonder Woman case?
No, the other.
Oh, the flip phone?
Yes.
I rarely ever have my flip phone out.
Oh, okay.
That's right, the then. Best.
The flip phone?
It's like, she probably saw that. So, okay.
She's
now.
Like, oh, never mind.
There's a thing called
closed.
The internet.
Is that what you
yeah, Scott makes a good
walk
point.
Me. Yeah,
so maybe
he's not wrong. I didn't have my phone.
Shame on you.
Shame on me. Shame on me. Do we have a break before the news? More
also,
after this.
I want 720. You to yell at Scott for making the wrinkling.
I did.
Again.
I yelled at him
did.
On the air.
Yeah.
I only pointed at quietly, but, and then you've been a whiny
Paul's
little
point.
Baby ever since.
I just feel
more
like,
after this. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is comedian Paul Favar, Esquire.
And actor.
And actor? Sorry, I apologize. Yes.
Add it to the list of things I will fail at soon enough.
His premiere episode of Chicago Med aired today. His second part. He's got a two-part.
Maybe, yeah. The scene, that the main scene, they didn't air the part. Unless they just deleted it. But I think they need it for the other character. I don't want to give it away, but.
Okay.
That's what
I have no idea.
So it might be my first and last time on is what I'm saying. There might not be a second episode.
Okay.
You had three episodes.
Isn't that sad? I didn't even know when mine was airing. I felt badly about that. Whatever. It's all good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. That's I didn't know until this week, but thanks.
No, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's very cool. Yay. And okay. Joining us is Ryan Shea, the general manager for House of Blues.
Esquire.
And
Esquire.
Well. I apologize. My apologies. Musician.
But I was not on TV tonight.
Not on TV tonight. But you're in the Blue Olive. Is your band
the Blue Olives? Yes.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. And you'll be performing tonight at the local Brews, Local Grooves event, starting at 5:00. Tickets are $10 at the door. You said.
$10.
$10. That's it.
You can't beat that.
You can't beat that. Yeah. I'm just saying. It sounds.
It's like a lot of bands.
Well, if you made it $9, you would beat it. But that's just. Legal.
You know what?
Jumbo.
Just show up and tell them you heard us tonight, and I'll charge you $9.
Oh,
that's
there you
a good
go.
Deal.
That is a good deal.
Dollar off. You guys
you
are
can't
welcome.
Beat that.
You heard it here.
I feel like I brought that on, and you're welcome WGN listeners.
And if anyone gives you trouble at the door, Paul Farvar will make up the difference.
Better call paul13@aol.com.
That's right.
No, that's not. I hope someone doesn't really have that, because I'd say that
somebody
on stage
does
so many times.
That guy hates you.
Yeah.
As soon as he finds out who you are.
They go to that website. This guy's not funny at all.
What is
He's
happening?
Not even a lawyer.
That's also Scott Santis over here, not Esquire. You and I are the only not lawyers in the room.
But I've drawn
right
a lawyer.
Have you drawn? You've drawn many,
drawn
many lawyers.
Lawyers.
I'm guessing you've drawn many, 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 many lawyers. Scott Santis, the cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, editorial board member as well.
Yep.
And we, of course, have talked on and off. We tend to keep our national politics confined a little bit to Monday nights and to Friday nights, but this has been such a startling week. I don't know how you don't talk about the firing of FBI Director James Comey. And so earlier in the week, on Tuesday, Donald Trump fired James Comey. President Trump had a letter delivered by his bodyguard to an empty office because FBI Director James Comey was traveling, was at the field office in California. He found out by watching, because all the other agents were watching TV. Apparently, did you see this, Ryan, where they all thought that it was a joke? Like maybe they were pulling up, he thought they were making a prank.
Yeah.
Which would what a great prank that would be, right? Look at how crazy your president is.
Maybe this is still part of it.
Maybe we're in the middle of a huge
thing. Is a prank. Joke.
Oh man, we're all being punked. Oh. Yeah. So and so there, we've had some conversations over the last couple of days as to whether or not that was. There's so many parts of this that the way he fired him, the fact that he fired him, and the story has changed as to why he fired him.
Oh, numerous times.
I was thinking about this, Esmeralda. You remember when and everybody remembers when the Benghazi attack on the embassy happened, and the story there was partly the story that it was the movie that had been made, the videotapes, and then and all these things, like different the reasons changed as to why they thought it happened or what the elements were, and so that was a big sticking point. So in the course of just 48 hours, I mean, people are like, oh, it's not the same thing, but it's our national security. This is somebody who is in charge of our highest form of law enforcement. And people have said, when we asked Paul, remember one of the things that people called about when we said, walk us through your support for our president, because I support the office. I'm having trouble with this president. And people said his respect for law enforcement. So tell me, with that in mind, how firing the highest, really, like basically your police chief for the whole country, by sending a letter to his empty office and making him find out by television, is that respectful of law enforcement?
Insulting him. I mean, that for someone who served for 14 years, is it, in the FBI?
I don't know. I know he was director for less than 10.
Well, he was 3 years, right? Three years as director, but before
but
that.
But I having been told many times that Donald Trump's respect for law enforcement is one of the reasons why people are very happy to have him as president. Is this still respect for law enforcement?
Well, FBI agents traditionally hate state. The state levels don't like, or like the city police officers don't like the FBI. So
but if something happened to the FBI, I guarantee you the Chicago Police Department would be have their backs with it. I mean, without even a second thought.
Just
and vice versa. The FBI has got the CPD's back. If push comes to shove, wow, I don't want to know what you know that I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think that a lot of there's animosity between the part. I mean, there's animosity between the FBI and the CIA. I mean, it's just natural that happens. But
I wasn't talking about the people like in law enforcement. I'm talking about people who say that they're tired, that they were tired of a lack of respect for law enforcement.
Right. I think a lot of law enforcement people were unhappy with Obama because of some of the times he took action or made statements, and he later regretted sometimes speaking too soon, like in Ferguson and the other situations that were pretty heated. But
right.
But yeah, I mean, I think that this situation, I haven't heard anyone defend this action other than saying, number one, he was going to be fired anyway if Hillary won. It's irrelevant. It doesn't really matter because they're going to continue the investigation, which it looks like that might be the case.
Well, yeah,
anyway.
Deputy director.
Acting,
Now he's the acting director of the
FBI. He was never an FBI agent, I don't think. He is an American lawyer who served as a seventh director of the FBI from September 2013 until Tuesday.
He was on season 3 of Apprentice, I thought, also, which was a really hard season.
Well, the most, I mean, there's so many parts of this story that are stunning, but the one that just, how can you be this tone deaf? How can you not know, or how can you believe that you do this and everyone's going to be cool with it? Apparently, the president is stunned at the national reaction to this.
He was.
Right, because part of it was that people were saying that, you know, well, Democrats should like this because they didn't like him anyway, and Republicans should be happy for this because they don't like him either. Did Republicans not like him?
Well, that's what my cartoon that's running today is all about, is the hypocrisy. Is the hypocrisy meter is going, you know, the needle is broken now, because both sides, you know, the Democrats loved, you know, hated him, then loved him because he said, no, we're not investigating Hillary anymore, we're done. And then he comes back shortly after that and said,
but is it hypocrisy, or is it just the party that's being investigated doesn't like being investigated? And
well, whatever it is, they loved him.
I'm asking you, is it hypocrisy if whoever's being investigated doesn't like being investigated?
Well, but it is. When the Democrats have been calling for this guy to be fired, and he gets fired, and now they're up in arms, that would be hypocrisy.
I think there's a little of that where, you know, when Whitewater was being investigated, people thought it was irrelevant. They didn't. The Democrats were like, this is a witch hunt. So I can see that argument being made that, hey, this isn't a big deal, even though it seems like it is with the whole Russian ties. But the bigger question is, going back to what you said, I think Trump thought this was a Machiavellian moment where he's like, well, look, he just said all these things that he screwed up on the Hillary investigation. Maybe now's a time where I can get everybody united.
Because Democrats don't like Comey.
Correct.
Like,
but, and that's what he said in
just
his
about
tweets.
And just about everybody. I mean, I don't know any single person, thinking person, who believes that excuse.
Right. We talked about that last night. We're like, if you're going to, I mean, I'd love to hear a defense of this firing. I even some Republicans have said they're concerned about the timing of this.
Right. There's a few moderate
Senator
Republicans
Burr
are left.
From North Carolina.
And the senator whose name escapes me from Nebraska came out the other night and said that this is deeply disturbing and we need. But, you know, on the plus side, I think it invigorates the FBI and it motivates them even more to investigate what's going on. There are stories. Politico posted a really interesting story Tuesday night, and it was fascinating about the internal workings of this White House, in particular of this president, who watches TV incessantly, as we all know, and he yells at the TV.
Yeah, I saw that.
My wife for this is, my God, we've elected my mother president of the United States because she watches Fox and yells at the TV.
Wow.
I mean, I yell at the TV. I mean, during Cubs. Oh, okay.
Sports is
different.
You
didn't say that.
But you don't respond to the things on television and make a unilateral decision that affects the country. Because you're mad. Because it comes down to what they were saying is that he was mad last week that he had apparently told, James Comey had told him over dinner and on the phone, you're not being investigated. Yeah. And then in testimony, when they were talking to him and to Yates, that he was investigating them. Is that what it was? That he was mad? And then I was calling him a showboater, which, I mean, like, kettle, pot, hello?
Yeah, really?
Grandstanding.
Well, and now the story, if it's true, is deeply disturbing. Is during that same dinner, he
was there cake? Was there a beautiful cake?
He did not mention a beautiful, the most luscious cake.
I thought it was the best cake.
The best cake.
The best cake.
Donuts in this one. Oh.
When he asked, Comey to have a pledge of fidelity to him. Mm. I mean, how terrifying. No, don't look at me.
I didn't know that.
This is true. Look it up.
Wow. Yeah.
This is the latest
loyalty
story that came out tonight.
It means the same as loyalty.
it's a loyalty pledge.
Yeah.
On my honor.
Do you pledge loyalty to me? And I was like, oh my God, with Don Corleone, I don't know.
It's so
look
bizarre.
Look what they did to my boy.
You know, the one person in all this that I think is hopefully going to be a difference maker is Preet Bharara, the New York Attorney General that was also fired for investigating Donald Trump. And he's got some great, you know, I think he's going to be the savior here, if anything, because he's got, you know, he was investigating him and he's a person that Donald Trump said, your job is safe. And then he sacked him. A couple months ago,
he's going to investigate him independently, like out of his own pocket.
Well, no, but if the Democrats get into power and they need to appoint a special prosecutor, I'm sure his name is going to come up pretty quickly.
It's all very surreal.
It is, and you have to look at now. You really do have to start thinking about 2018.
But also,
I have to think about this more after this on 720 WGN.
Tell me something. That
You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. It is the end of our show. We've been having a great time hanging out with Ryan Shea, the general manager for the House of Blues, Scott Santas, the political cartoonist and editorial board member of the Chicago Tribune, comedian Paul Farvar Esquire. Thank you to all of our guests who were on the show earlier, including Rich Lenkov, David Hochberg, our friends from Wealth Can't Wait. There were so many things that happened tonight. But here's my something good. I was very excited. Something popped up in my Facebook feed, which is that Nick DiGilio's movie club for next week at the Movie Co. in Rosemont is Indiana Jones Temple of Doom.
All right.
Temple of Doom on June 6th. I'm very excited about that. So everyone should go there. Are you going to be there, Scott?
Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes?
I don't know why. Monkey brains. Eat some monkey brains.
I actually saw that movie. I never see most movies I'm supposed to see, but I actually saw
it. Would you come see it again on the on the big screen?
Sure.
Plus, they got the big comfortable chairs. There's free parking. It's right off of 90.
Dang.
It's right by the blue line for you, Paul, for you, Scott.
Nice.
Yes.
Wait a minute. Do you know there was a Splash 2?
Can't forget about Paul's other favorite movie. I mean, let's not just put that away. When is that coming to town?
Wait, was that my voice?
Yes. That was weird. You're looking around like, am I talking? What's happening? I am amazing right now.
I didn't give you my rights to use my voice. I'm going to have my agent call you, Mike.
I've got Lenkoff on call. You can get me anytime.
Better call Lenkoff. Ooh, better call Lenkoff. It rolls right off the tongue.
It does.
Scott, tell us something good.
Millennium Park has released its schedule for music and movies that are going to be played in Grand Park. My favorite thing of anything that happens in this city, no offense to anyone anywhere, but those concerts at Millennium Park, we actually have the picnic basket. We have a table in a bag, Patty, and we take it to Millennium Park.
But where's the table?
We set it
in a bag.
It's in a bag. You can take it to Millennium Park, and we put out the tablecloth, and we have a nice wine and some cheese. And
it's not as shovey-dovey as it is out in Highland Park at the Ravinia. Is it? Have you been to the Ravinia?
No. I don't know.
Yeah, it's crazy out there. It's fun. It's wonderful. I love Ravinia. Have you been, Ryan, to Ravinia?
I haven't. Can you believe that?
It's a very cool experience. But people come out with their whole dining room. It's wild. Do people do that from Millennium Park?
Not whole. Well, we bring our table.
Right,
which is in a bag.
Esmeralda, you do the. I know it's in a bag. Esmeralda, do you do the? You do the concerts in the park at Millennium, don't you?
Yeah, I do. It's not too bad. It depends on what it is and all that.
Right, that's obviously going to bring out bigger crowds depending on who the performers.
Well, we go for the Grant Park Symphony Orchestra, which is wonderful.
What were some of the names that you were excited about on that schedule?
It doesn't matter.
Oh, just that it's
I can
out.
Remember. Just that it's almost spring. It's almost summer.
You can smell
and
it.
And we can go there and just under the sky, you're surrounded by one of the great cities of the world. It's the best time.
The best city in the world, but I'm just particular. Ryan, you got something good to tell us?
So how about Patrick Kane, I think today,
gave
up his first class seat
to
a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
How about just a great story about Patrick Kane?
That's
great. A couple years ago, that wasn't the case. So that's good.
And also, the rest of the Blackhawks are partnering with the Chicago Park District and Brooks Park up in Edison Park to put a hockey rink in. It's very exciting as well. Paul, you got something good for us?
They have a lot of time on their hands, right?
I'm at the Improv Schomburg this weekend with Gad Elmaleh. He's amazing. He's really funny. And it's been so far, we had one show tonight and it was great. I can't wait till the ones tomorrow and Saturday.
So much fun.
Then Sunday, I'm going to be hanging with you, my interim mom.
Oh, that's right. You're going to, because I'm very proud of you. Esmeralda, you got something good to tell us?
I just finished tonight my first set of flamenco classes.
Hey, congratulations.
Ooh. So, yeah. On to fundamentals, too.
Do you feel very flary with your hands?
A little bit. Right. It seems a little easier. I feel a little more flamenco-y.
All right. Flamenco-y. A little more. Michael, before we go, didn't mean to skip you. Do you have something good to tell us?
Oh, no. Thank you very much. Mother's Day is coming up. Can't wait to see my mom and my dad. And I'm going to be doing that Battle of the Bands judging at the Hard Rock Cafe on Saturday. So starts at 8.
Okay.
And you can come and check it out after you get done with all the other stuff you do for the weekend.
That sounds great.
That's it.
That's at the Hard Rock Cafe on Saturday, yes?
Bands, he accepts food bribes of any sort.
I do. You got bacon?
Look at that.
You get
bacon
an
in a can, especially.
Points.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. Don't forget to follow Scott Santas at S. Santas. Find all of his cartoons at ChicagoTribune.com/Santas. Paul Farvar, his podcast, Singles Only, available on iTunes.